Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. I'm back in the office. Happy to be back in Medellin. My eyes getting quite a bit better. Swelling in my face going down significantly. We're still not at 100%, but we're going to this week. I'm super excited to get back to work, back to live streams, back to interviews, and back to everybody's favorite whiteboard videos. Let's get into this article that I just saw on CNBC. And I think this sheds light on why there's such a weird discrepancy between what the economy seems like, especially when you look at the bond market and the inversion of the yield curve, and you look at a lot of these other metrics, and then kind of in isolation, you see the unemployment rate. And you guys know as well as I do, the talking heads at the Fed and CNBC and Bloomberg, they just, for whatever reason, they just get hyper-focused on the unemployment rate. And because the unemployment rate is low, that's why you always see these headlines like, oh, the economy is booming. And we have this, the economy's on fire, I've heard some people say. Or when Jerome Powell is talking about how he's really going to get tough on inflation, you know, at Jackson Hole or something like that. He always says, well, yes, we do have an inflation problem, but the economy is very strong. And we as rebel capitalists sit back and say, the economy is very strong. Then why on earth can't you raise interest rates back up to normal? Why don't you just do that right away if the economy is so strong? And if the economy is so strong, then why do I see homeless people everywhere? Just as an anecdotal piece of evidence. Or why are all my friends struggling financially? Why am I having a harder and harder time to pay my bills? Why do I have a lot less money left over at the end of the month than I used to if the economy is so strong? So, and then of course, you know, the macro stuff. Why is the euro dollar market or euro dollar future curve so inverted? Why is the bond market just completely upside down if everything is so hunky-dory and this economy is just on fire? Well, let's get into this article from CNBC, and I think it'll shed some light and hopefully allow us to connect some dots here, because that is the bizarre outlier that everything is kind of screaming recession. And, oh, by the way, including two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. Let's not forget that minor fact. All right, let's go over to this from CNBC. Make it. I guess this is some other part of their website or something. Anyway, nearly 70% of all Americans are looking for extra work to combat inflation. So, I think this is why you could see the unemployment rate so low, is because Americans have to get out there and work as much as possible, to the point where they're 70% of them, according to this. I mean, it sounds high, but we'll go with it. That the large majority of Americans are having to look for extra work, i.e. another job, a second job, a third job, in order to make ends meet. So I don't care what the unemployment rate is. I mean, let's just take it to an extreme. Let's say that the unemployment rate was zero, but yet everyone was barely squeaking by with four jobs, having to work, let's say, 16 hours a day, just to, and they're still not able to get by, and the standard of living is decreasing. Would you somehow say that that's a fantastic economy? The economy is booming? Obviously not. Obviously not. How can you have the standard of living going down while at the same time the economy is on fire? Those two things don't make sense, right? So, but if you look at it through the lens of, we have high rates of inflation and we have all of this temporary demand, let's say, or a temporary spike in demand due to the stimulus and due to basically government spending and government distortions of the real economy, and then it would make sense. You know, again, why is it? I would like to ask Jerome Powell or one of these talking heads, why is the unemployment rate important in the first place? And I guarantee what they would tell you is it's kind of a proxy for purchasing power. Because take it to an extreme, if you had, let's say, no welfare system or no stimmies or no UBI, and let's say 100% of the working age adults were unemployed, well, they would have very little purchasing power, if any at all. Where if 100% of them were employed, obviously they would have a lot more purchasing power. And then this purchasing power, I guess you could say, is a derivative or a proxy for aggregate demand. And this is what the mainstream economists really focus on. Aggregate demand, aggregate demand. Okay, so if that's what's most important, then you really can't get hyper-focused on the unemployment rate. What you have to do is you have to ask yourself, what is happening to the purchasing power of working-aged Americans, regardless of what the unemployment rate is? And don't assume that the unemployment rate being low is synonymous with purchasing power, because in an inflationary environment, it might not be, especially if wages aren't keeping up with the rate of inflation. Think about it. If everyone's got a job and inflation is at 20% and wage growth is at 5%, as far as purchasing power or aggregate demand, is it any different than if the unemployment rate went from, let's say, 3.7 up to, I'm just throwing out a number, 7 or 8%? The net result would be identical, would be a complete loss of aggregate, not a complete, but a substantial loss, decrease in aggregate demand. So you get my point. Why is it that these PhD economists and quote-unquote experts on CNBC are just ignorant or naive to the fact that if you just scratch beneath the surface and just think through the nuance for 30 seconds, just like we did, it becomes obvious that putting all your eggs in the unemployment rate basket and then just assuming that that has to be the entire economy and ignoring all the other things that we discussed, that doesn't make any sense at all. So let's continue with this article. So unfortunately, it starts off with one of these stories. And, you know, whenever an article starts off with a story, I mean, I get it. It hooks readers, and it's a good tool. And I should probably do it on my website, to be honest with you. But it always leads me to believe I'm not going to get too many facts. It's all going to be just more kind of tugging at your heartstrings. But anyway, so this guy's name is Mike Petrie, and he noticed an alarming pattern. And by the way, how do they get these people, like these random average Joe and Janes? I've always wondered that. Anyway, Mike noticed an alarming pattern, and I'm sure a lot of you will resonate with this. His bank account would get uncomfortably low on the weekends before he'd get his paycheck, paid biweekly on Wednesdays. Despite no changes in their daily habits, bills for him and his family have skyrocketed. $120 grocery bill turned into $200. $50 to fill up the tank turned into $100. He says a couple times a week we had to put groceries on the Discover card. This is another thing, guys, and I got to give a hat tip to my good buddy Schiff, because he talks about this all the time. We see credit card debt exploding, and the talking heads and the PhD economists say, oh my gosh, look at that, and look at the unemployment rate. This means the economy is in fuego, does it? Or does it mean, like Mr. Petrie, that with his one job, he can no longer afford to put food on the table, so he's got to charge it to his credit card and just to buy some time? So this gentleman's 45 years old, lives in Louisville, Kentucky, and he works for a credit card processor. Well, you know, sounds like he's got a decent job. He noticed other essential costs like utility bills have gone up. So if Mr. Petrie is feeling the pinch, just think about the people in the UK where his utility bill might have gone up by, let's say, 20%, where a lot of the utility bills in the UK have gone up 200%. if not more, combined with all the other consumer price inflation. So then I want to point out that it's not just Mr. Petrie, and it looks like he's got, I don't know if that's Mr. Petrie or that's Mr. Petrie. Maybe that's his oldest kid or I don't know. We'll assume it's this guy and that's his wife. So husband, wife, three kids here, or maybe that's cousin or something. Who knows? But I just want to point out that it's not like this guy is supporting his whole family. His wife works as well. So he says his wife, who works as an activities director at a nursing home, they make decent money. So look, both of them have full-time jobs and decent jobs, and they can't afford to put food on the table. Why? Because consumer price inflation. Why do we have consumer price inflation? One of the main reasons is because of the government policies regarding the Cervasa sickness. You guys know this from watching my videos. What do? They locked everyone in a cage. In other words, they decreased supply, and they send out stimmy checks, and they reduce people's expenses with student loan forbearance, the mortgage forbearance, the rent forbearance, or whatever those programs were called. So they increase their revenue, they decrease their expenses, if you're looking at P&L. So you increase demand, you crush supply, and then you're just shocked that we have consumer price inflation. And like I said, during the Cervasa sickness, till I was blue in the face, and I'm sure you guys remember this, we have to do a cost-benefit analysis. That it's just like with Russia, with these people that come out and they have some harebrained policy that's just going to make things worse, like putting a price cap on what we're willing to pay, as an example. And you saying that this is utter nonsense and it's just going to make things worse. And what's the response you get? Oh, well, we have to do something. Well, we have to do something. Well, no, you don't. Not if doing something is going to make it worse. And it's the exact same thing when we had the Cervasa sickness. You said, hey, guys, we're going to have to pay a heavy toll for this in the next couple years. And the costs are going to far outweigh the benefits. Well, we have to do something. We got to give people money. We got to do something. We got to lock everyone in a cage. Can't give them their personal freedom. We got the Cervasa sickness. We got to do something. Well, congratulations. Bravo to all of those people, the central planners and the authoritarians and the useful idiots that went right along with their drinking their Kool-Aid. Because now we see there's no free lunch. And now the poor and middle class and people like Mr. Petrie and his wife are having to pay the price for the government policies enacted in 2020 and 2021. And it always comes at the expense of the poor and middle class. Always. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. What's staggering is a large percentage of the poor and middle class look to the politicians that are handing out all the goodies to fix the problem that they themselves created. So I don't want to go off too far on a tangent, but you have to, if you're a sophisticated politician, which maybe none of them are, but if you're a sophisticated, let's say a Machiavellian type of politician, you're going to look at this and say, wait a minute here. If I create more and more problems, this allows me to claim that I have more and more solutions. And if I create more and more problems, it makes society even more dependent upon what I'm going to tell them I can do for them to make their lives better. What I was going to say is just buy votes. But that, I mean, that's what it boils down to, right? They're buying votes by promising things to make your life better. And unfortunately, what happens for these people is by electing those individuals' policies just make it worse in the future. You know, it reminds me of this just fantastic quote from Dr. Thomas Sowell, where he says, today's problems are a result of yesterday's solutions. Let me say that one more time, because I think it's incredibly powerful. Today's problems are a result of yesterday's solutions. We are seeing that in full effect in real time with consumer price inflation. All right, let's go down further. And of course, all my highlights are disappeared. Just that. I'm not going to complain about my highlight app. Let's go through this. I remember this is something I wanted to mention. Already 85% of Americans said they've changed their spending habits due to inflation. So again, if you're a demand side economist, a Keynesian, how can you come to the conclusion GDP growth, real GDP growth, is going to explode, or it's just going to continue to trend higher and higher and higher, and we're just in a booming economy because the unemployment rate is so low, if 85% of Americans say they change their spending habits? That doesn't mean they're buying more stuff. That means they're, when they say change their spending habits, they're not trading in their Toyota for a Ferrari. That means they're spending less, not more. Or they might be spending more, but I should say they're buying less. They're buying less or fewer goods and services, but potentially spending more, right? And then 57% have sought out new or additional roles in the past year, according to this survey. So rapid inflation is forcing people to look at not only how they spend their money, but also how they're earning their money. Okay. In many cases, those looking for work already log 40 hours during week and are picking up extra shifts. High inflation and economic concerns have already been driving a rebound in labor force participation and number. It's the result of a bad economy, not a good economy, where the Jerome Powell types would look at this, or the Steve Leismans, and say, oh my gosh, labor force participation is going up and unemployment is going down. This is fantastic. This means we've got this Goldilocks economy. And the Fed is going to be able to raise rates, have a soft landing, and we're off to the races. No, those metrics don't tell you that the economy is strong. They tell you the economy is weak. So nearly 5% of the employed Americans hold multiple jobs. And I guess that number most likely will be increasing substantially. Now, they go on to talk about more specifics to Mr. Petrie's situation, where he's taking on these extra shifts. It's quite staggering what he's doing just to make ends meet, especially when you consider his wife is working full-time as well. Let me try to highlight this and see if it works. Okay, he does worry about taking on extra shifts rather than work 7 days a week. So now he's working 7 days a week, but he's considering taking a 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. shift at Lowe's, which is where he has the part-time gig, and then working 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. at his full-time job. So working from 5 days a week from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. just to put food on the table, just to make ends meet. It's really incredible. But like I said, this helps us understand why the unemployment rate is an outlier when everything else is screaming recession and screaming fundamentally unsound and very sick economy. Now, one thing the article points out that I'd like to mention is they say, well, a lot of these people are having to get a second job and a second gig, and they're looking forward next year to being, or they're really considering transitioning into a new job in order to help them pay the bills. So they're not too worried about it right now because they know the labor market is tight, basically. And their idea is, well, okay, I'll put things on the credit card right now. And then when I'm ready next year, in a couple months, I'll go ahead and get another job that pays more. And I'll be able to do that easily because all my friends have been able to do that. And then I'll be able to make all the bills and I won't have to keep running up my credit card. Then maybe I can pay it off. Problem with that is it assumes the labor shortage is going to last indefinitely into the future. And you guys know from watching this channel that we can go from a labor shortage to a labor surplus, bam, just like that. All that stock market has to do is go down by 50% when all of these corporations put a freeze on hiring. And then instead of hiring, they start firing people. They start laying off workers, which is what we're seeing a lot of these big corporations do regardless. Again, Jerome Powell, how can you say the economy is booming when all these big corporations are laying off workers and reducing their staff? But let's get back to the topic at hand here. So all of these people that are running up this credit card debt, you know, they could be banking on getting another job that pays more. But what happens if the economy goes into severe recession, which is basically what the bond market is telling us? And instead of hiring, now all of a sudden, all of these corporations, small and mid-sized businesses, are firing employees or laying them off because they just can't afford them anymore. So then what happens to the credit card debt? Then what happens to Mr. Petrie's ability to put food on the table? And by the way, let's just think about what happens if all of these people that need to get a second job, maybe that second job isn't even available to them, let alone a primary job that will pay more or pay enough for you to pay off that credit card that you're running up just to put food on the table, pay the rent, and put gas in your car. So I wanted to go over this story again. So I think it helps us understand a little bit better as to what's truly going on in the economy. And when you look at the nuance and then put all of the metrics together, even the unemployment rate, I think when you look at it through the lens of a decrease in purchasing power due to consumer price inflation as a result of government distortions in 2020 and 2021, it starts to make a lot of sense. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.